Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Allie.
And you are listening to episode 2 of Return to Sender.
Let's do it. So about a year ago today, we had the Women's March on Washington. And this past week, there have been marches all over our country. We became Time Person of the Year, which I never thought I'd make the cover of Time Magazine, but I did. So surprise. And we've been hitting the Me Too movement strong since October. So we thought it was about time for Return to Sender to cover the women's rights and women speaking out Me Too movement. And we have Katie to talk with us today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Katie?
Sure. Hello. My name is Katie, and my background is in women's studies and international studies. I majored in both at Towson because I went to a very tiny Christian high school where women's rights were not on the table, and I wanted to learn a bit more about that. I'm currently working as a, I own my own company. It is an environmental inspection company, which keeps me very busy, and still trying to stay involved in the women's movement, but I'm a little less involved now that I'm not doing all those internships and fun things, but hoping to make my mark a little later in life.
Yeah. So what do you think when you hear people use the phrase millennial? Like, what's your gut reaction?
It depends on who it is. Because sometimes people say it in disgust, which I don't typically agree with. And other times, you know, they're just using it to describe themselves. So it kind of depends on the context. But I would describe myself as a millennial. It's technically my generation, I guess. And I don't know. So it depends on who's saying it. But typically, I'm trying to kind of take the torch and give it a different meaning than I think what most, you know, older people, you know, as we would say as millennials, the baby boomers would
those baby say about it.
But, you know, and I think that it is like, you know, a conscious thing now for us who do identify as millennials to kind of, you know, give it our own meaning because we're such a vast generation.
So full disclosure, Katie is my little sister.
True.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Sorry.
Not like you're ashamed or anything. But I would like to have you describe a little bit more because you said now you're doing, what's the phrase? Environmental testing?
Environmental inspections.
Environmental inspections. Mm-hmm. I think to give listeners a little bit more background on what you were doing before that, I think would be helpful for this conversation.
Sure. So I graduated with my degrees in spring 2016, I believe. And so basically after graduation, I took a couple of internships. One was with Johns Hopkins in the international development kind of organization. So they basically did international patient safety, you know, because that was my first major, was international studies. So I wanted to see if I liked it. And I was like, this sounds perfect for me. And then I got in and everyone in there was biology majors and things like that. And
my people.
Yeah. And I was using MLA and they were using whatever biology majors use. And it was not quite fitting. So I left that. And then I started an internship with NARAL, Pro-Choice Maryland, which was great. And my internship ended up turning into a part-time position as a student organizer. So basically for a few months, what I was doing is I was going around and I was speaking to college kids and I was talking to them about this bill that we were presenting, which would make emergency contraceptive available at all hours at, you know, every university in Maryland, every public university, because there are a lot of situations that happen on campus. And we had a lot of testimony from a lot of students saying that, you know, I was assaulted or I just had made a mistake one night, whatever the story was, because all the stories are valid no matter what they are, and saying that I needed it and I didn't know where to get it. And we were doing cold calls to local pharmacies to see what it was like. And the results were a little staggering because I was doing a lot of these cold calls and across the state of Maryland, a lot of our local pharmacists still didn't know what the laws were pertaining to emergency contraceptive. I spoke to one pharmacist who was like, well, how old are you? And I was like, well, you know, I'm 17 going on 18 because there is no legal age limit actually for emergency contraceptive. And he was like, well, you're too young. I can't talk to you. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know if you're buying this for somebody else. Like, you know, I don't trust this. And he got very defensive and he got really upset with me and started yelling at me over the phone.
Oh my gosh. And to be clear, when you say you're cold calling, you're pretending to be somebody who actually needs this.
Yes. So they don't know that I'm doing a survey. And it was really shocking, like the lack of knowledge that a lot of our pharmacists have, like the people who we trust to handle our medication don't know the basic laws around this. But, you know, to make a long story short, I was doing that for a while. And then, but really to have a full-time job in the field, you know, I needed an advanced degree and I really didn't have the experience to do what I think would be justice to a lot of the women who need help from organizations like this. So then I, you know, went into business with my father, actually, and now I own this environmental inspection business that kind of pairs with his home inspection business, and that's what we're doing now, which is really fun and great.
Good. Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. So we're going to start by talking about the silence breakers, right? That's what this generation or this, you know, past couple of months have been dubbed. And if nothing else, I do want to put out there, well, obviously it's more than this, but we have finally used the correct way to use the word two, which is really nice. The T-O-O is the me too.
What a bane. Hopefully that is like over here.
I'm hoping it's like the second most important thing that comes out of
it. It is. I said, if nothing else, at least we've learned that two, like me as well, is T-O-O. So with that out of the way.
Unlike return to sender, which is the number two.
But not T-W-O.
No, let's be clear.
Uh-huh. So there's a huge, obviously, throughout history, widespread prevalence of sexual assault, especially in the workplace pertaining to women. Mm-hmm. And speaking out is something like the silence breakers is what this has started to be called. But that isn't necessarily the first time the silence has been broken. It's been broken for a long time, but it's the first time people have started listening and they're have been like definite consequences for people who have been committing these offenses. There's less of like the, I'm going to get fired if I speak out.
Yeah. I mean, which on some level is shocking that it, you know, unfortunately on some level it's not shocking because, you know, we see this with all kinds of things, but it is crazy that it took this long. You know, there's a great, what was that great joke by one of the late night hosts where, you know, he was talking about the cover, like you said, which by the way, I wanted to ask you, how was the photo shoot for the Life, was it Time Magazine cover?
It was great. I sat right next to Taylor Swift.
Oh, you're so lucky.
I know. It's my boo.
Was she nice?
She's so, I mean, my bae. Sorry.
Did she smell good?
She did smell good.
Does she look like she smells good? Is that?
Yes,
she does. Like, I feel like she smells like pansies and glitter.
I would say Tahitian vanilla.
Mm. All that glitter is bad for the environment, by the way. Is that part of your environmental inspection test?
I've heard that too.
Is glitter content?
Yes, I'm scraping the bay currently for glitter content.
Barbie is 100%.
JK, it's right on.
Amazing. Well, if you want glitter, it's probably in my lungs because having two daughters in the house, my goodness, that is a lot of glitter. But anyway, he had a joke where he was like, you know, they were on the cover of Time Magazine. He was like, I think they were supposed to be on the cover of It's About Time Magazine. And that spoke volumes because it's true. I mean, it is just crazy that it took this long.
So I know, like, I'm a teacher, which is a hugely female-dominated profession, but I know like that the principals who were near retirement when I started were just kind of like the good old boys club, and that's not saying a negative thing towards them. They were just kind of promoted because they were part of a group, and they were male teachers, and there are very few male teachers. But you know, very easily, I mean, my principal, my boss was wonderful. He could have very easily taken advantage of any of us, but I guess I didn't realize how much power he had as an individual until I went to a countywide meeting with him and everybody stopped to say hi to him, including the superintendent who is female and also had worked in the county for a rather long amount of time. But it was just like he was like this like guidepost almost within the community because he was just elevated at a point in time when only men were kind of pushed up into these high level jobs.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Do you think it was a lot of men being pushed up into those, or do you think it was men going after those positions.
I think
positions.
Their expectation to be the breadwinners when he was doing this career was much higher. You didn't necessarily need the two incomes in the family. Lots of families had them, but women, I won't say women were content staying as teachers, but they didn't feel the need to push, I guess, through the glass ceiling. Like, they were like, I'm not going to work to break this on my own if I don't have to.
Interesting. Yeah, I just wonder why, you know, it seems like, and there was definitely issues with women being suppressed, but I wonder whether it was less a specific, whether there were specific individuals or organizations keeping them down, or whether it was just because of the, I don't know if it's countrywide or worldwide, view of
cultural
of
acceptance.
Right. So, you know, the whole cultural issue of women not being expected to go into those positions that both kept people from hiring them and then also kept them from going after those jobs.
Well, and I think a good bit of it too was, you know, if you think about the dynamic of a couple at that time, you know, if a woman started making more than a man, then it shifted the dynamic in the marriage as well. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women feared that and a lot of men discouraged that. So if your wife was a teacher back then and she started kind of moving up, like, I think it's kind of, you know, socially, especially in that time, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm just gonna stay where I am because I don't want to, you know, push any buttons. I don't want to, you know, rock the boat or anything. So I'm just going to lay back a little, you know?
So she was probably likely getting both individual pressure from mm-hmm. people and then also just a cultural pressure that was kind of keeping her, you know, she was keeping herself back because of that.
Yeah, because if you think about it, like, at the end of the day, I mean, that's your home life, you know? And I mm-hmm. think the instinct is like, well, what do I want? Do I want better pay? And do I want a higher position? Do I want to do this for myself? Or do I want to keep my family intact? Because, you know, it's also kind of a, what do you call it, a trope that, like, you know, if a man starts to feel threatened, then the whole family kind of dissolves, you know, which is another thing that I'm hoping kind of, and I think that's kind of another thing pushing the Me Too movement is, like, that idea isn't as prevalent, you know? You don't have to have a, you know, a subordinate woman and a, you know, dominant man anymore. I think that, you know, millennial men are kind of starting to step up and be like, yeah, my wife is the breadwinner or whatever, and it's great, you know? I think a lot about, sorry to bring this up, but in Sex and the City with Miranda and Steve.
You don't have to apologize. You know?
I know, Miranda. I'm a Charlotte.
But, you know, like, that's one of the scenes that most crushes me in the whole series is when Miranda is, like, so happy with Steve, and he is just like, you make too much money, and I feel uncomfortable, and, like, and she goes, I'm being punished for being successful. And he goes, no, that's not how it is. And she goes, it is how it is. Because it is. I mean, that's what happens. And I think that that's been implanted in women's minds to be like a big fear, you know, is like, if I'm too successful, I'm not going to find a mate and I'm going to wind up an old maid.
Hmm. Yeah. And Miranda, what, for those of you who haven't seen it, she was a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that adding on to that point, which this fits perfectly because I was going to say this, I think that women get a lot of mother guilt. Mm. And that was part of her issue in the show, that she was getting home after her baby was already asleep and the mm-hmm. nanny was putting the baby to sleep and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I think that women shoulder that a little bit more than men, the I'm not being a mom, because if your kid does something wrong, nobody's ever like, who's their father? Mm-hmm. They're always like, what did the mother do to create such a brat?
Yeah.
So you feel that pressure a little bit more in a mother standpoint. But this also happens in relationships without kids, so it's not mm-hmm. just like a mommy issue.
Yeah, I think with the relationships without kids, it's probably just more carryover from mm-hmm. from just the way the culture is. But I mean, obviously both those things are rooted in just evolutionary,
animal science.
Yes. That's what I was going to say.
Biology,
animal science. No, but they're rooted in the evolution of the species where, you know, generally with our species, the male is the one that went out and gathered the food and provided, the external kind of, you know, things that they needed to survive, whereas the woman was responsible for, you know, staying with the young and taking care of them because physically they were the only ones capable of doing that. So I thought it was really interesting when you brought up trying to, you said something about keeping the family together. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they're, you know, the way that developed when I think about, I mean, I don't know exactly what time period I'm thinking about, but maybe like 1800s, early 1900s. It seemed like there was just, the men started to lose that sense of providing quicker than the women started to lose that sense of feeling pressure to hold the family together. So I think for a longer period of time, women felt like they had to do whatever they had to do to hold the family together, whereas men were, you know, it kind of got away from like, I need to be out there working and taking care of my family. And I don't know, maybe it had to do with the Industrial Revolution and being able to, you know, make more money more easily. And, you know, which I know pushes us into a later time period, but, you know, maybe it was being able to make more money more easily felt like, oh, well, I've only worked 20 hours this week and I've already done what I need to do to provide for the family. So now I can do whatever the hell I want for, you know, for the rest of the week.
It could be, but there's shifts happening like in agrarian societies too, like in places like Togo. Like I was reading an article recently, like the women are now like the key water collectors. So even though the men are out, you know, farming, hunting, gathering, like it is still like you're away from home multiple hours a day, walking to and from a water source and like risking, like what are waterborne diseases that you can get? Dysentery, risking things like dysentery and coming home. So it's like there's a push forward and it's not just due to technology or factories or whatever. It's kind of sharing the workload.
Yeah, that'd be kind of like an environmental one. You know, yeah. I mean, typically our species would have been one that would try to be near water.
I was also thinking when you're talking about the Industrial Revolution and how it kind of shifted those household roles. I know with the addition of a lot of like time-saving things for women and like the mass production of things, like it kind of also diminished their household role.
Oh, yeah.
Because then like... Originally, like they made all the clothes and they made all the butter and they made all the things. And then all of a sudden they didn't as much, you know, and I don't think it really hit until, you know, we get into like the 60s era. And like if anyone's ever seen the show Mad Men, like we see Betty Draper go through a big shift in this. And she is, you know, she has a household helper because she is in the upper middle class because Don has a really well-paying job. And she also has the addition of TV dinners. And she doesn't really do much, you know, like she'll go grocery shopping and she'll have company and do all the things. But like, she really does, like, she's just not doing much. And I think that was a big addition to the shift in households and also to like women getting a little restless and feeling very depressed as to what their situation was, because, you know, there wasn't that like, oh, I'm doing work, because being a stay-at-home mom is still a full-time job.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Absolutely.
And I don't want it to come across as if I'm saying it's not, but, you know.
Right.
But if you, especially in her position, if you have a helper and things like that, like, you may feel like you're not contributing or, you know.
Right. But the funny thing is that also is now, I feel like, what has allowed... you know, dual working households. Mm-hmm. Like you couldn't have that if somebody had to churn the butter and you know, do all the stuff. Like it's impossible.
And, yeah. Wash things by hand. Like you couldn't do it.
Right. So like technology and the Industrial Revolution has now allowed us to have, you know, both parents at work and you just need somebody to watch the kids during the day. And you can do that somewhere else because that person doesn't also need to do all the things around your house. You know, you don't need a maid.
Yeah.
Although I know people that have them, which I'm sure is great. But yeah, you don't have to have somebody, you know, in the house all the time doing things because so much of it is done for you.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, and I'm just thinking of this off the top of my head, it seems to me, just from the little bit of history I know, that like the doing societies or the doers have women a little bit more equal than the thinking societies. And just like the brief comparison between like Athens and Sparta, like Greece had some of the earliest direct democracies where everybody could vote except women, but like all the men could vote. And then you had like Sparta where it was like, yeah, we train our women in battle. They're the last line of defense. Mm-hmm. Like, so they were a real doer society. And they were like, we need to get things done. That's a waste of a person if we don't have them doing as well. And Athens was like, well, their brain's not as big as ours. That's my Greek British.
That was a hell of a Greek accent.
That was Father Time chiming in today. Okay, so let's get into men in this issue, because men and boys can hashtag Me Too. And mm-hmm. I think that that is getting overlooked. And I think that it kind of, this situation is also detrimental for men and boys who feel like when they put out that they have felt threatened or they have been assaulted or sexually abused, that saying it makes them A, less of a man, and B, makes them uncool. Like, I feel like there's this trope of like this locker room like issue almost, where it's like, oh, she hit on me, I didn't feel comfortable. Like, really, dude? Like, mm-hmm. you didn't feel comfortable? And I think that that's a big issue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You don't have to think that happens. It definitely yeah. happens. I mean, for sure. That's why it was so big when Terry Crews came out. I mean, that guy, that's a man. I mean, this guy like 280 of pure muscle. And yeah, when he came out and admitted, you know, or not admitted, certainly not the right word, but, you know, talked about what had happened to him. Yeah, I was actually surprised more people didn't come out after that, because you know what happens. But there, I think there's two big things working there. And one is what you're talking about, which is this kind of within the, you know, within the male circles, there's a sense of embarrassment and a sense of weakness that you feel if something like that happens. But then also there is, and this is something that Allie and I talked about, was I've certainly been in situations where women have, you know, touched me in a manner that would be considered inappropriate. But there is, it doesn't feel like harassment, because physically there is no sense of worry on my side of the equation. So there's nothing that woman could have done. And this is just these particular cases, but there's nothing that woman could have done physically that I could not have stopped, if I wanted to.
So it's not as threatening.
Right. So it's like, I didn't stop it because it was, you know, from the other side, which is that cultural side of like, what am I really going to make a big deal out of this? Like, I don't know, it's kind of, because it's never been anything extreme, you know, just little things here and there. But then, you know, if it escalated, there was no fear for me. You know, certainly physically, there was no fear for me, because I could easily stop them if it got too far.
Right. So, yeah. And I was, it's interesting in the role that men are playing, because I think that sometimes, and this is not excusing women, for those types of actions, but I think that sometimes women do things like that to men because they're performing a role that they think they're supposed to for men. Do you know what I mean? Like, kind of mm-hmm. like the stewardess role on an airplane, where you're supposed to be mm-hmm. kind of fawning over him as a person. I think women still sometimes perform that role publicly, and it's uncomfortable for everybody because everybody knows it's mm-hmm. not real, but nobody says anything about it because that role is so culturally accepted. Mm-hmm. Also, men couldn't really get fired for speaking out about it either. Yeah. There weren't many like women bosses, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. No. And also, I mean, it's not as if we're diminishing the fact that this can happen with, you know, women against women and men against
men. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
my gosh. So, absolutely.
And that's one of the things I was thinking about just when we were doing the intro was thinking about how just the physical difference in people is really what has allowed this to happen for so long. Because, you know, I think that gap is closing a little bit. I think, just women are becoming physically stronger, because of, I guess the way that the world has changed, and they're just, you know, they have time to do things like go to the gym and work out more. And you know, those roles are changing where it's not stay at home and you know, the male goes out and hunts. So I think the physical gap is changing, but then I was thinking when you mentioned, you know, Socrates and like way back when, you know, it was men and boys, you know, it was boys getting, you know, physically, you know, harassed and raped by the men. And it's because of the physical difference in their makeup. And, you know, unfortunately, men have taken advantage of that for a long time.
And I think some of that is that men are forced to, because of society, like, suppress their feelings. So I think they need to take out those feelings in another way. If we weren't like constantly telling boys like, don't cry or don't act like this, or like, we were just watching Holes earlier, which is a wonderful movie and I love Disney, but like, they're digging the holes at camp and he was like, what do you think this is, Girl Scout camp? And I was like, we're still perpetuating that idea that if you're a weak boy then you're a girl. Mm-hmm. And I think that it, I think everybody still kind of falls into those traps sometimes. You see girls do it a lot on Facebook. Like, I hate hanging out with girls. Girls are awful. They're too much drama. I just want to be with boys. That's so anti-feminist in the sense that it's just like you are condemning one whole gender to this stereotype and you don't even realize you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think we do that all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I also think a lot of it, like what we're talking about now, has to do with class too. Like, you know, we're talking about like in the Roman and Greek era and things like that. Like, and also, I mean, with women in the workforce, because a lot of them, you know, were of a lower class too. And if, you know, if people of a lower class lose their job, like their whole family suffers. So, and I think it became a lot easier for women in that situation because a lot of lower class women have to work to support the household as well. And, you know, if they report it, they risk losing their job and then the whole family suffers. So I think, you know, it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier too, with like women tend not to want to risk those things because of the integrity of the family. And I think now that we are in this newer generation and it's taken more seriously, that's not as big of a fear anymore because, you know, thankfully with like some of the laws we have now, if a woman speaks out, she's more protected.
No, I completely agree. And I think they're a lot more protected for a couple of reasons. And one of them being the powerful are not as powerful as they used to be. And I know people love to talk about how the, you know, the gap between the rich and the poor is as big as, you know, bigger than it's ever been, which in one sense is true. But also the low end of that gap is so much better off relatively than they were. So, you know, it's a little different, but there's a lot more clarity in what happens, you know, especially legally. And this is talking strictly about our country because I don't know enough about what goes on in other countries to know. In our country, granted, it still happens. I mean, there's still people that can influence, you know, up to the highest levels of our country and they can get away with things that they shouldn't. But I think, you know, back in the day, it was a lot easier to sweep that stuff under the rug. So if somebody came out, you know, and said something against, you know, the Pulitzer or somebody, you know, like they're not going to get away with that because, they are going to get away with that, you know, the rich person, because they can easily squash a story like that. Whereas today it is so much harder to squash a story like that.
So I wanted to move into the, like women's sexual history, because there's a couple things that annoy me.
Ooh.
And I want to, that annoys me, first of all. Second thing that annoys me, I want to go like way back. So, and like kind of trace it forwards. And I am a history teacher. I am sorry. I can be annoying with this kind of stuff. But so if we're talking back like with Homer's The Odyssey, you've got Odysseus and he goes and he fights 10 years in the Trojan War. And then he's got to get home and it takes him 10 years to get home. He's being attracted by the sirens. He's banging Calypso on an island for 7 years. All the while, Penelope is sitting at home fighting off all these suitors for 20 years. And she's like, no, my husband still lives. Like, what? She had no sexual urges in 20 years. This is what we're going to publish as, you know, romantic poetry for people to read. Like, it is a bad way to look at women as like these keepers of the house that are unable to break a vow when their husband is clearly doing it constantly.
See, why don't you look at that from the other side? Look at the strength that was represented in the woman in that story.
No.
Just the pure strength to uphold her vow.
Or the fact that she would get stoned if she broke it.
Yeah, if she got pregnant while he was gone.
That may have played a small factor
in the lack of contraception.
Yeah.
Talk about proof.
Contraception's important.
Right. So then, after that, Jake and I were watching this like series on Netflix called Myths and Monsters, and they were talking about how Guinevere was like one of the first feminist characters in literature because she had an affair with Lancelot. And it was like showing that women had urges away from their king husband, which is fabulous. And then moving from there, we land on ding, 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 England. Thank you, Great Britain, for causing most of the problems in today's world. Although I love you, our friend Simon, don't listen to
XOXO.
This.
XOXO.
He's super right-wing anyway.
Well, you know exactly what he would say right now. Yeah. You might want to also thank them for creating the modern world.
Thank you, Simon. God bless the queen. So anyway, like there's that myth coming out of England, like people put on tablecloths because it was like too sexy to like see the legs of a table and men would get aroused and that's what they were for. But the thing that really bugs me is the sexual double standard. The women were not allowed to like sex. So if your wife liked sex, she was a whore, so she couldn't. So you had to go out and cheat on her because you had to have both urges fulfilled, but your wife couldn't do that. And I think that's where a lot of today's problems come from. Men seeking still to fulfill that urge that doesn't need to be fulfilled.
Very true. Taking it back again to Sex and the City with Trey McDougal and Charlotte approaching him and saying, I'm not a Madonna and I'm not a whore. Because he couldn't get it up because he saw her as too virginal for his manly tendencies. You can cut this, by the way.
No. That's what she says.
You're not woman enough for Trey McDougal.
AKA,
is that really his name, Trey
AKA
McDougal?
Agent Cooper from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Anyone hasn't seen it. But I do agree. And it's very frustrating to see these, like, you know, and it was a sign back in the day, too, that it was like, if she was a sexual person, she was like a witch and like demonic. You know, they had all these witch trials and things like that going on, and things like if you like sex and enjoy it, then you must be possessed. And that kind of followed women around as well and kind of discouraged them from enjoying sex and therefore, you know, enjoying life, you know, and it was all these things kind of made up by the upper men in the church, because of course only men could control the church, and you know, all these things to kind of contain women's sexuality. And you can call it XYZ, I don't care. That's what was going on.
Yeah, and I think that sexuality is just like the far reaching end of this. Like in general, in most fairy tales, in most cultures, women's curiosity was punished. Mm-hmm. So like you even see it like in like even Disney fairy tales, like, oh, you're curious? Well, now you're gonna fall asleep for 100 years.
Don't go to the surface area.
Yeah, don't go to that surface, or don't leave the castle, or don't come and find your father with the beast. Oh, now you're gonna be locked up. And of course it's Disney, so it works out in the end, but curiosity was always punished in women in fairy tales.
Yeah, or maybe they just did a poor job of representing, you should listen to your parents when they tell you to do, you know, maybe it's for your own good. Hey, don't walk in the street without looking both ways. Well, I'm curious. I'm going to go walk in the street without looking both ways. Guess what?
I'll take that.
I wouldn't consider that curiosity, though.
No, but certainly to some degree that is correct, where it's just like, all they wanted to do was explore a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe if their parents had said, let me take you and show you, you know, instead of just, no, don't go, don't do it.
Because to be fair, it happens to Simba, too, with the lion, the elephant graveyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
and
true.
And he's a boy character. It's not just women, but curiosity was punished.
But again,
in these children.
The less powerful, the subservient character.
Yeah, and that's an age thing, you know? Yeah. He was the younger one. He shouldn't have done that or whatever. And again, I do think that is how women have been controlled for eons, you know, and because they weren't allowed to attain positions of power, they weren't allowed to know what the truth was. And we think about the power in being able to read and write for the longest time in religion, you know, it was all in a language that wasn't available to the common people, which, you know, again, just provides so much, like just this huge barrier to people in knowledge. And then, you know, it, especially with women, I think it, you know, created this barrier, and then women couldn't speak up and they didn't know what was going on or what the right thing to do was, so they just went along with it.
And it's crazy, and it does all stem really from physical ability. I mean, you look with other mammals still, the, you know, generally what happens, you know, with, you know, like with lion prides and stuff. And, you know, the best is, was it elephant seals? Oh my gosh, when they get together, it's insane. So the biggest, strongest male controls everything. And that's just what happens. Like, and if another one comes in, the only way to challenge them is not to outsmart them or, you know, anything else. It is to just physically fight them. And that's the way mammals have come up. And it's just, it's crazy to look at every other species except for humans and just go, man, they're like still there.
Right.
Like even the closest, like apes, it's still there. It's just the biggest, strongest male runs everything.
But like the reason that humans are seen as so different or so special, like as a Homo sapien, is because we
iPhones.
React.
Is it iPhones?
I wish it was iPhones. No, we react to more than just physical brute strength. Like intellectual ability is just as important. So like it drives me bonkers that just 20 years ago, Joanne Rowling felt issue with putting Joanne on the front of a book. Mm-hmm. She had to put JK because she couldn't be a female publishing a novel about a boy and have people purchase it. That's 20 years ago. That's not ancient history.
Well, I was going to say, you kind of opened that by saying like, well, that's what sets us apart is that we were, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'm
but
saying
like,
we don't.
Only just recently.
No, yeah, but like, I'm saying it should set us apart. And we say it sets us apart, but only if you're one gender, like you're intellectual for so long. Now it's getting better, but like for so long it was like, oh, well, if you're smart, you don't have to be super strong, but only if you're a male or only if you're white. Like,
right. Yeah. Because I think, again, that just cultural difference lasted for a long time where it was like, yeah, eventually you could just be a really intelligent male king and kind of get away with it for a long time, you know, for your entire life. Whereas, women were not afforded that same representation and power because of the longstanding, you know, cultural and just evolutionary, you know, leadership role that men had.
Mm-hmm. Money did change things, though. Like there were monarchies, obviously, like, you know, Bloody Mary and Queen Victoria, who like, it's not like there weren't female monarchs.
Yeah, and they generally lasted a very long time.
But they were also very, at least with Bloody Mary, they were very brutal. Like you had to show strength in another way by being vicious.
Yeah, swing the pendulum a little bit. It's like, I've got to be so brutal, you know, that nobody even dares challenge me.
Right. I want kids at a sleepover turning off lights in a bathroom and saying my name into a mirror for all eternity.
It is amazing, though. I mean, I don't know. You're a history person. Was England the first person to have a female monarch?
No.
Okay. Well, does somebody want to enlighten me as to who did have the first female monarch?
There are a lot of cultures that had women in power. Like specifically, if you look a lot of some Asian culture, but then a lot of like Native American groups would see women that were, if you were like your elders, it was important that you lived long because it was not as common to live long.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So like you would be considered as wise or like a healer the longer you lived. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, well, not sometimes, most often women have a longer lifespan than men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I was just thinking like the respect factor of, you know, somebody couldn't just come along and take that person out, whether it was a physically, you know, weaker man or, you know, a woman or whoever. Like the people surrounding you had to have a certain level of respect to protect you from that happening. And actually it really physical strength comes out of it at some point because the area that you're ruling is just too big. You know, it's not like when I was talking about elephant seals and stuff, you know, there's like 30 of them or whatever in the pride, you know, I'm sure they're not called prides.
Pride.
So I'm sure it's not pride, but whatever, you know, whereas like it gets different because the larger these communities got, it really didn't matter how physically strong you were. Eventually there was enough people that could have overtaken you. So at some point it had to switch from just a brute strength form of leadership to, you know, that intelligence and the intelligence that it takes to be respected in that position.
Well, and I think that's why a lot of tribal cultures tend to have women as leaders, because if you think about the fact that the men are away, they're hunting, they're not there in the community, and women are seen as the knowledge keepers and they're seen as the knowledge sharers. So a lot of times they're, you know, in charge of bringing up the young and they're in charge of sharing the knowledge that they have in their hometown because the men aren't there. So a lot of times they're actually more equipped to be leaders in the government sense of things, mm-hmm. because they just know more because they're present and they're the ones that are raising the children. And that, especially in a lot of Native American cultures, it gives them a lot of respect in the community just because, like, that's the next generation and they're in charge of the next generation. So they're basically in charge of keeping the whole civilization alive.
Right. And then, you know, in order to teach it, you've got to know it all.
Yeah.
You know, you have to know everything in order to pass that knowledge along. And that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure you can look back to some generation of, you know, human beings and go, you know, that's in this area. This is when they started passing knowledge down from generation to generation. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, I don't have any data, but I would guess that probably coincides with women starting to come into power in those groups.
Mm-hmm. And women, like tribal cultures also have like a community mm-hmm. to raise children. Like
yeah.
there's sometimes a wet nurse. So you don't have a mother who has these duties of breastfeeding every 2 hours, you know, on the mark. So there's like a, there was a lot more freedom in the child rearing sense that you're all doing it together.
That's so funny because that, like, that is such just this little microcosm of our society today, which is you don't have to, you know, churn the butter, yeah. gather the milk, make the bread. Like, you can just go to the store and buy all of that. So it's like, instead of just having this, you know, small tribe of people pitching in to help raise the kids or, you know, because back then that was mainly your job was to keep everybody alive. Mm. And now it's, you know, much more to thrive. But yeah, now you don't have to do that anymore by yourself because you've got an entire country and really now an entire world of people contributing to your life. I mean, you look at most people's house, you have stuff from all over the world and not just knickknacks, but things you use and you need, or at least, you know, by today's standards, you need, mm-hmm. and they come from all over the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's called economic interdependence.
Well, and that's why, like, thanks, bringing babe. It back, bringing it back to the point of topic, like the Me Too movement. I mean, if we look at that, like the reason I think that it's becoming such a big thing is like we can communicate with women of all and men of all sorts of walks of life. Like there's not that, you know, class barrier or racial barrier. Like we're all on this equal platform of the internet and we can communicate. And it doesn't matter if we're the president or we're, you know, an environmental inspector in Maryland. Like,
yeah. you I feel know, like I know one of those.
But, you know, like someone can hear us and we can make a point known and it can be shared. And I also think that, you know, that's a feminine trait of like, we want to keep a culture alive and we want to maintain a culture of, and we're trying to reform that culture too of like, women are valuable, women are important. And we shouldn't be treated like this. So I think that, you know, women in power also helps us create new cultures for women and new spaces and new ways that we can be who we are and also new ways that we can assert what's right and what's wrong because we have more of a voice now because of a lot of different things, but mainly social media.
Mm. Yeah. I agree. And we were, Jake and I were at the Women's March in Baltimore last weekend, and it made me have to really check my privilege mm-hmm. Because we were there and like they start with the speeches and there were lots of speeches, you know, like an hour and a half of them. And it was, you know, at first it was very women's rightsy and then there were the politicians, but then there were the Black Lives Matters movement. And then there was, you know, the Women of Baltimore Hispanic movement. And then there was the Islamic women's movement. And I was kind of for a minute, I was like, what is this march about? And it took me a minute to like step back and realize how privileged I was as a white woman, like the marginalization of like Islamic women is far beyond what I have ever experienced. Like Islamic women in the United States, not only are women, not only may look ethnically different, but also are wearing a symbol of their religion every single day. So it's like they're marginalized for race, religion, and gender all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was a moment when I was realizing what I was battling for. Not mm-hmm. like my personal women's rights, but like for women's rights, for transgender and for yeah. races and all different religions. It was like a moment that I didn't realize I was going to have. It was cool.
Well, and I thought about that a lot with the, after like the uprising and things like that in Baltimore a little while ago, a few years ago, a lot of white women that I worked with felt the need to take off work and like go down to the marches and things like that. But then I started to think about, well, a lot of women whose children were affected in what happened down there, they don't have a choice. Like they have to go to work because if they don't, they lose their jobs. And, you know, that was kind of my big moment of checking my privilege and like, yeah, if I wanted to, I could take off work. I'm not going to get fired. You know, mm-hmm. I can just go and I can do that. And, but I thought about, but like, you know, there are people whose families were affected. Like a friend of mine, his, you know, he was like, my aunt lived right there. Her house was, you know, caught on fire, like things like that. Like, you know, he's like, my family was affected, but they're not in a well-off enough financial situation where they could take off work and go rally behind the marches and things like that. And I think that was just kind of my big moment of checking, you know, my privilege and the fact that I'm able to be here recording a podcast about it all. And there are other people that literally don't have time or resources and things like that.
Yeah. And Katie's referring to, so like 2 Aprils ago in Baltimore, I'm sure most people know, but there were riots after the Freddie Gray trials mm-hmm. and mostly Black Lives Matters and kind of this negative culture between the community and the police force in the brutality of the situation. So that was, I think, 2 Aprils ago, right? In Baltimore, three years.
It was more. I was in my apartment on St. Paul Street.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was three years then?
Must have been, I think it was 2014.
Oh, no way.
Isn't that crazy?
So coming that up is on crazy. 4 years since
yeah. then? I can't even believe it.
Oh, well, you know why it doesn't seem as long?
We've been because on the news.
Well, the trials dragged out for
yeah.
so long.
Oh, really that's long true. Time, yeah.
So the trials went on for a long time, which kind of kept it in the news. So, you know, last we heard about it, you know, mm-hmm. on a regular basis was probably only a year ago because mm-hmm. Those trials were still going on. But it was crazy. I mean, I remember there were people that worked for me that lived over there, mm-hmm. and you know, we offered them hotel rooms.
Yeah, this
and
is
stuff
West Baltimore.
Because it was, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, one of the women that worked for me, she lived over there, and we offered her a hotel room, but she had to go back because she had family there. Yeah. And she was like, you know, that'd be great, but I can't. I need to go home and make sure my family's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely talk about Black Lives Matters mm-hmm. in future podcasts. It's just something that's touched our culture a lot mm-hmm. recently, and it's going to be really important in the future how this is dealt with.
Certainly. But one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about women who, you know, doesn't have to be women, but people who wear their religions, mm-hmm. you know, on their exterior, you know, we've talked about before how the two things people notice about you immediately are your gender and mm-hmm. then your race. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're there.
They're the two most judgeable.
Right. And well, I think that's why, because you don't have to ask any questions to find out, you know,
right.
somebody, and you know, race isn't quite as clear. But yeah, I mean, and you know, every once in a while, gender is not quite as clear, but you know, generally you can recognize those two things immediately. And yeah, when you wear your religion on your sleeve like that, then it's also your religion, and that makes it, again, very easy for somebody to hold an immediate bias against you, you know, based on you know, something, you know, your religion, which is crazy.
Yeah, and when I teach the religion unit, which, again, is something we'll address in a future podcast, but when I teach that with my students, they always ask, well, why don't they just take it off? Mm. And that's when I have to, like, explain that religion to many people is as clear to you as your race or your gender. Like it isn't something you can take off. It's not something, it's a part of you. Mm-hmm. So
right, and oftentimes more important to you than
yes
than
yeah.
your race or
absolutely
your gender.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I also wanted to talk about the just overall impact of this movement on millennials in general. What we see is like cultural stuff coming in from the outside, and then what millennials are kind of putting out into the world. And one thing that I wanted to bring up to start with that really, really bugs me is how stereotypes towards women is still a running joke. It's like a running joke in sitcoms, in movies, just in general conversation about, you know, things like people generally say, oh, you look great for having two kids. Like there has to be a qualifier, or like there'll be a woman in a TV show and she'll joke about having a headache so she doesn't have to have sex, or like in the movie, specifically the movie Christmas Vacation bugs me a lot because the dad has this gorgeous blonde wife and is checking out this younger woman like she's not good enough for him. And I think that our culture is constantly kind of perpetuating this as it's supposed to be funny. Mm-hmm. And I just don't find things like that amusing. They piss me off because it just makes it seem like women are the punchline to these jokes.
So I think probably on a grand scale that is probably true. Men do take hits in this category as well, where it is mostly fathers, I think. There's a lot of shows where it's just the father or the husband.
Oh, it's just a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, a big fat dummy. Yeah. And so, you know, it definitely can go both ways. Mm-hmm. But on the grand scale, yeah, I'd say, you know, generally women are. And I don't know. It was weird to hear you describe it as the butt of the joke because I don't know. From my perspective, that's just never seemed to be the case.
Well, I think women's trauma is the butt of the joke.
Mm,
you know, men's maybe shortcomings are the butt of the joke a lot of times. You know, so like, you know, if a guy like doesn't get his wife the right flowers or whatever, it's like typical sitcom thing on like Valentine's Day or something. You know, a man who, you know, makes a mistake. But I feel like sometimes women's trauma is the butt of the joke, I think.
Well, and you know what's interesting about that to me is that so I would say that those two, you know, the two things that we just isolated are pretty common stereotypes of comedic shows. And you look at those two situations and the man is in control of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And but the women or the woman is not in control of what's happening. Mm-hmm. So you look at that scenario, that still has to do with the man's actions and his feelings toward his wife. So when you're looking at it as the woman's the butt of the joke, it's in a situation where she has no power to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas the man does. And that's,
is the butt of the joke, is that a phrase? Did we just make that up?
Isn't that?
Yes, the butt of the joke. What?
I get phrases wrong all the time.
I feel like it's not a phrase. I said the punchline.
You're the butt of the joke.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I was just asking. I've never said that. Your point was valid.
You've never heard the term "you're the butt of the joke"?
No, I didn't. Okay.
Oh wow.
You know, in every societal thing, it's like women are the less than. You know, they are less strong. They are less intelligent, they are less this, they are less that, they are less adapted to be leaders or whatever. I don't know if there's a technical term for it, but that's like the definition of a woman is not a man. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Rather you know than saying? The opposite.
Yeah, it's exactly like the opposite.
Like men are rarely described as less able to take care of a child.
Yes.
And where they are, it's not as
I don't
as
think
frequently.
That men are less able
I
to take care
I think they pretend
child.
Not to be.
Yeah.
Guys, we got a good thing going here. Let's not ruin it. Okay?
I was going to say, don't say that. There's a lot of stay-at-home dads out there that will fight you on that statement. Well, and please do go to our Facebook page and tell Jake that he's a jerk for saying that.
Tell me I'm fine because I seek public approval at all times.
Yeah, no hate mail to our guests, only please. To hosts. Yeah.
Well, I
you.
Can't help.
Also, she brought us margaritas, so she's
I did.
Good.
Yes. I couldn't make a cat's pajama because you need thyme-infused honey for that, so I brought margaritas.
And we're already killing the bees.
The cat's pajama.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I can't help but to think of everything in, like, evolutionary terms just
because you're a biologist. I think of it all in social terms.
So when I say things like, yeah, you know, men are less able to, it's just because physically they are less able to take because they literally can't feed a child with their body in the way that a woman can. So now we have formula and, you know, you can store breast milk and all this stuff that allows them to stay home and take care of kids.
Speaking of that, apparently there's a breed of spider, and this particular spider, the mother will lay eggs and half of them will turn into baby spiders and the other half is for the baby spiders to eat when they're hatched, so they have food. But then quickly they eat all the other eggs and they don't have anything to eat, so the mother actually sacrifices her own spider body so that the baby spiders can survive and grow up. And
I just love the way you said that, her own spider body. Sacrificed her spider body. That's crazy though. That seems, I mean, just terrible from an evolutionary perspective.
I know.
Well, got one shot at it.
Well, they have so many babies.
Guys,
too.
That's true. Called they're doing all right. Stretch marks on the human species.
So what you're saying, she doesn't really sacrifice herself so that the kids can eat. She looks at her stretch marks and goes, all right, I'm out.
It's not worth it.
I can't wear a bikini. I'm out.
I'm giving up.
But, that's a shout out to Phoebe Judge's new podcast. Ooh.
That must be a spider with horizontal stripes.
Oh my gosh. Ew, stop it. Stop it. So one of my previous students is on my, I've been teaching long enough now that my sixth graders are now graduating from college, but she's on my Facebook and she put up this meme that was like, I hear women say, if that's assault, then everyone's been assaulted, and they almost get it. Mm. Like, yes, that's the point. So many people have been assaulted and touched appropriately and treated inappropriately.
So the last line of the meme is, and they almost get it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's another problem with the whole situation is like sometimes I feel like women are afraid to speak out because like their trauma seems so much less than others. You know, like for me, I've never spoken to anyone about the fact that like, you know, I worked in this restaurant and the restaurant owner would like make lewd gestures to me and like try and hug me all the time, you know, because I was like, well, he never actually did anything, you know, like he was weird, but like, you know, I was never, you know, assaulted. So I don't really speak out about it because I, you know, don't want to like, because I don't want to put myself in the camp, the same camp as like, you know, those gymnasts who just spoke out. I mean, they were assaulted as children going into being young women. They were assaulted.
Right.
You know,
and absolutely.
And it feels wrong for me to put myself in the same camp as other people. But then I also have to remind myself, like, but that situation also still shaped me, you know,
right.
And I still felt ashamed about it. And I never told anyone like,
yeah, like, I think it's different levels, but it's the same thing. I think that in many cases, women, because of that less than mentality, are kind of treated like trinkets, like you're something. So like even when, and I've brought this up to both Katie and Jake before, like you're walking through a grocery store, like buying some marmalade and like an older gentleman stops you and is like, oh, you should smile more. Ugh. And you're just like, I am not.
The purest sound of disgust.
It happens all the time. And it's like, I am not here to put on a show for you. I understand if I'm a waitress or if I'm working at a cash register and I look pissed off, that is not appealing as a customer service person. But I'm literally just trying to buy some marmalade and like get home from work and like deal with my kids. It's not my job to like
to please the masses.
Yes, exactly. It's not my job to smile and
wave. How much marmalade are you buying? What, of all the things,
every
the
time I
store?
Buy marmalade,
guys, I don't know why. It's a weird thing about the marmalade.
I
store
tell
that I
this
go to.
Story, and I've practiced it with lots of different foods. And marmalade is the hitter.
Marmalade's
a good one.
Every time.
It's the hitter.
Makes it memorable.
Yeah, it does. People are like, she was buying marmalade, and somebody told her to smile. She just wanted some jam.
And
but those are different.
That is such a.
It's not jam. It's marmalade.
So that guy could have. It could have been just an honest, like, friendly guy, but I get that it comes from a place, and not for him personally, but the fact that he thinks it's okay to say that, even though he doesn't mean it in a negative way, potentially, really just comes from like where, when he grew up and like the culture and that being okay to say, even though most of the time it's not okay to say.
Well, and I think that men always think that it's okay to just approach any woman, but you know, but they don't feel that way about anyone else. And I don't feel that way about anyone. Like, I hate talking to people, you know, so like I don't feel that.
I heard that,
you know,
typical
what I'm saying?
Millennial.
But I really,
what's a computer?
What's a hello?
But I think that, you know, the different, like, I think that there is a clear difference in like older men feel that they can just like approach a woman no problem, and if she's rude to you, that is her freaking problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? And like, that's a problem with you, that's not a problem with me, honey.
Right.
Because they also feel the need to call you pet names even though they do not know you. But I would never like go up to a man and be like, ah, I see you're buying that marmalade, you know. I had some guy one day, I was just buying eggs, and he was like, why don't you get the six packs? They got, you know, packs of 70 over there for $2 cheaper. And I was like, I don't need 70 eggs. It probably wasn't that amount of
But the math, Katie.
But the math. You know, and
you are taking those home to cook for a man, right?
Yeah. All right. I'm trying to think. What is the larger quantity of eggs?
No, you're right. That big. It's not 70.
No, but that big.
18.
All right. 18.
Oh, you mean the really big
one? No, the Easter egg carton.
Oh, yeah. The Easter egg size carton.
So he was like, you should just buy the bigger thing of eggs because it's cheaper. And I was like, but I live with myself and one other person who don't eat eggs that often. Like, I applaud you. Thank you for, you know, suggesting that to me. But I can do simple math. And I do know that the larger thing of eggs is cheaper. But I don't
They'll
need
go
that
bad,
many
and
eggs.
Then you'll throw them away.
Exactly. I
and
am
then
not,
your cost per egg
yeah.
goes up.
So,
way up.
And I think like there
maybe
are
I could make egg salad, but I'm not gonna.
Oh, yeah. I did.
I think
yesterday
it was good. It was good.
Remember
we put
that
old
egg salad
in it?
I made at Christmas 2 years ago.
Yeah,
that egg salad is pretty good.
It was bombing. I think that these things run the gamut of like simple math and approachable, mm-hmm. like, why don't you smile more?
Yes.
But like this past November, I was like in a good mood. It was, you know, the end of the work week. Mm-hmm. I'm like walking out of the store and it was Veterans Day and there was this guy in like a Navy hat. So I smiled at him and he says, "That's right, honey. You look good. You should smile."
Stop. No.
And I was like, he was like an older gentleman and I know he thought he was complimenting me, but that's not a compliment. Like,
no,
that
it's
not. Is totally. And the moment that sticks out in my brain for all of history is in Space Jam. When Lola,
I already love where this is going.
Lola Bunny, who is clearly the best basketball player on
character.
The Toon Squad besides MJ, it goes like they the alien the monster what were they called the monstars oh.
The
monsters,
yeah,
the
monsters.
they said something doll and she does the don't ever call me doll and then
don't
like
you're like blows her,
her
ears
and then goes and dunks the basket and you're like yes Lola claps for you. That is the moment that I feel in the grocery mm-hmm. stores. I want to be like don't ever call me hun. Blow my hair out of my
and
face
and then dunk on them.
Yeah. And dunk my marmalade.
You should carry a basketball with you at all times. Just dunk
that
on
marmalade
people.
Right in the basket.
But
you've never once come home with marmalade from the store, by the way.
Guys, I don't eat marmalade.
Paige made me some marmalade recently.
Oh, Paige is great. We're going to have her on soon. Paige is fun.
Bring marmalade, Paige.
I have it. It's pear. She works in a garden store now or whatever, a florist shop, and she got a ton of pears.
Oh, buddy.
They're going to throw them away because they were pretty into putting the fruit baskets. But anyways,
yes.
I also, what was I going to say? It's about the oh my gosh,
Lola Bunny.
Lola Bunny. Oh dang it, what was it? It was something else about the I just like I hate that any type of man can feel like he can comment on a woman's look,
physical appearance.
Yeah. Physical appearance. Because like also again going back to like, you know, I'm a fairly strong person, but I, you know, might not be able to defend myself. And it's a big thing. And like men who kill women, like when they feel rejected and then when they feel emotionally hurt, like they don't take it out in like a, man, that sucks, like I'm gonna be sad about it. They like take it out in like a, I'm gonna murder that woman. Like, yeah. So I think sometimes it's like a defense mechanism for us, like, oh yeah, thanks, like,
right
yeah, well, have a good day, self-preservation yeah. Because you don't want to be murdered, yeah, like, and put in the back of his truck
some serial killer to show up.
You know, I can't believe mom wasn't killed by a serial killer. Our mother, I mean, she was a prime suspect because she was so sweet to everyone.
She just talks to everybody.
There was literally a time where one of the lifeguards was, he wasn't even a lifeguard, he was pretending to be a lifeguard.
Oh.
This guy just came up to her and said, I got some lifeguard equipment in the back of my truck. Do you want to come and see the back of my trunk? And she was like, yes, yes, I do.
I definitely want to see the lifeguard equipment.
Perfect. Yeah. And he lied and told her he was in his 40s. And then she
Which for some reason was an attractive attribute.
That was a really attractive.
This is when she was a teenager. Yeah, they weren't allowed alive for this.
She was like 15 and the guy said he was 40 even though he was actually like 18.
No, he wasn't 18 because he was at a high school mixer the next year. So he was not even a senior in high school at this.
He said he was just a liar. That was a line that worked back then.
Yeah. That's a weird line.
You want to watch the submarine races on the beach? Yeah.
Classic pickup line.
Yeah. Classic.
But and there is some fine line there, though, where it's like, I mean, you have to be able to approach people and be friendly.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some balance there where it's not. And the problem is that that line is different for everybody. Yeah. So, you know, some women, the line is drawn at a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of men, you know, the comfort level is different. Like, mm-hmm. I would not feel comfortable saying certain things to a woman because I, you know, to me, it would be offensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, it's a different line for some men and a different line for some women.
Well, right. I also think it's situation based.
Yes.
Like,
agree.
I hate it when I'm just in the morning, like, I need to get to work and I need to put gas in my car. Twice now, people have just been yelling at me from the next car over. One guy was just like, you playing Tupac? And I was like, no. He's like, oh, thought you were. And I was like,
there's no music playing.
No,
in my car.
It was a podcast, actually.
Yeah.
It was the Tupac podcast.
But yeah, there's also like the shutting down conversation in society is not like the goal. Mm-hmm. Like I had a perfectly pleasant conversation with an older gentleman in the grocery store the other day when it was like massively cold in Baltimore. Mm. And he was just like, my son's in Florida. And he said this, that, the other, and or maybe Australia or something. And I was like, oh, he should put some of that hot in a jar and mail it to us. Like just stupid conversation.
And then did he say, can you put some of your hot in a jar? And give it to me.
He did. No. He did.
Why don't you take your hot out of the jar, sweetheart?
No, sweetheart. And then he like flicked his cigar ash. But no, like it was a perfectly innocent conversation about the weather, and it, but I was tense the whole time because I was like, when is he gonna say it? Because yeah. I am like so pretty.
I just love that this old man just became Groucho Marx in your head. Give me some of that hot, sweetheart.
There's the accent that's I was going
the
for.
Ash off the cigar.
I also like, I don't know if you guys have ever had this experience, but one time I was at a bar and I was waiting for my boyfriend to get there, and there was an older gentleman next to me who I actually recognized as a regular at the restaurant that I used to work at, but he didn't know who I was, but he just started talking to me because he was alone and I was alone, and he's like, you know, probably in his like 80s, you know, so he's a good bit older than me. And he started talking, and like we started talking about Baltimore actually, because like I'm super be more smug, and he obviously was as well. And it became this really awkward thing just at one point, because he was like, yeah, I just love going around and like, you know, eating at all the new restaurants and like really seeing where all the hip new young kids are at. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, have you ever been to that restaurant, you know, Sweet 27? And I was like, yeah, I love that place. He goes, I haven't been yet. Are there a lot of black people that go there? And I was like, what? And he was like, because I don't really want to go if that's the vibe there. And I was like, and I like, and I was like, so and then I like, weird. I was drinking. He like bought me a margarita, and then I was like, oh, this margarita is tainted like by like racism.
It like tainted with racism.
And yeah. It was just,
oh
and
my
I was
gosh,
like,
if you ever have an album, it has to be called Racism Tainted Margarita.
I feel like, but that's it the was wrong order. Like,
you know, and it just, it literally takes a second for us, like a conversation to go from like polite stranger to like, oh, either creepy sexist stranger or creepy racist stranger, or like,
you've shared too, you know, much, sir.
And then I also felt like it was a weird position for me because like I'm a white woman and he was an older white man, and I felt like it was kind of that, like, you know, like a wink, like we're on the same page, and I was like, but actually we aren't, you know what I'm saying?
Like, well, and also now you've like already invested some time, I know, into this, and it's like
you were,
it's hard to all of a sudden
in
like,
that racism. You dragged from the racist cop, Katie.
I did. And then I felt so bad, and then he was like, but that black girl that works, she's real nice, and I was like, yeah, I mean,
there is so much, so
you know, and I was like, I don't want what? To be a part of this conversation anymore.
No, I was going to say, like, that just reminds me of one of the things that people do that drives me insane is they try to use a single example. So he's kind of working at from another angle, but using like one single example to justify or to make a larger point. Yeah. Like people try to make this large, like, you know, be like, oh, you know, it's because of like longstanding, like, you know, we're talking about women's rights and stuff. And it's like, oh, well, there's tons of long-standing carryover that even though laws have changed and everything legally is now the same for men and women, that doesn't mean that there's not still a lot of long-standing kind institutional of. And cultural you know, holdbacks for women. Mm-hmm. So, but people will say things like, well, you know, my wife's a woman and she's a, you know, super powerful lawyer or something. It's like, right, but that one example doesn't eliminate all the other.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I always find it like very, it puts me off when women are like, I don't understand all these marches. I've never felt oppressed in my life. Uh-huh. And it's like, do you know what? You not feeling oppressed doesn't mean it's not happening. You don't have to feel what someone else is feeling to validate that what they're saying is accurate.
Yeah, and how about, great, that's what they're hoping for. You know, like they hope everybody has your situation, right, where they don't, you know, never
they're
feel
not
oppressed.
Saying, really, everyone should feel oppressed and marginalized, and I hope every woman gets assaulted at some point. Yeah. Like, that's not the point.
Right.
It's like, well, I would like to be in a world where, like, there aren't so many women saying me too. And and that was a big part of, you know, Oprah's speech at the, what is it, the Golden Globes.
Oh, it was so good.
You know, and she was like, I hope that we have a world someday where like not so many women have to say this. And, you know, and it's such a powerful stance because, and I think, you know, it surprised a lot of people to hear so many people say it. And, and you know, and again, like a lot of my personal fears kind of stood in my way. You know, and I didn't feel quite right saying it, but that's a personal thing. And I also, you know, applaud people who maybe didn't feel comfortable saying it, because a lot of people, you know, still know they're attackers, and a lot of people are in situations where they really still can't say it, unfortunately, and they shouldn't feel pressured to say it. But, you know, for a lot of women, it was really empowering.
Yeah. I didn't get to hear the whole speech. I mean, you know, it's out on the internet. I certainly could have if I wanted to go see it.
It was very good.
But I heard, you know, pieces of it here and there. And I think I heard a pretty good chunk of it on one of the news podcasts I was listening to. But one of the things that I appreciated with the speech was she did not undermine the efforts of men. In fact, she applauded the efforts of men in that speech. I mean, she started with applauding the women, you know, in the room who had stood up and said something, as she should have, but then immediately followed it up with, and all the men that have stood by their side and supported them and helped us, you know, to get to where we've gotten in the last couple of months. And that was really important, to not isolate and make it a man, you know, versus woman, or men versus women issue. So I thought she did that really, really well.
Well, and Emma Watson did the same thing in her speech to the United Nations.
She got a lot of flack for it.
She did. Yeah. And the He for She movement was like a big deal. She was saying, I'm inviting you to be a part of this. And people were very, they did not like that with her.
No. Well, and like, I appreciate, because like, you know, I mean, my understanding of it was like, she wasn't saying, you know, we can't do it without you. She was saying, it's going to be a lot more powerful if we all do it together, you know? Yeah. And I, you know, I love Emma Watson. I loved
I love all of her United Nations efforts and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But again, like you're saying, like it can't be just, you know, women doing this. Like it's going to take everyone to kind of stand up and do things.
Yeah. And it's really important in those situations to not make it feel like you're battling a whole group of people. Mm-hmm. You're battling the people that are harassing other people, you know, right. You're not battling men and, mm-hmm. You know, they've both done a great job. Cause I did see that whole speech cause Ali, showed it to me and, mm-hmm. and had me watch it. It was really good.
It is.
But it takes more than one person, you know, to be outspoken like that. So like Emma Watson, you know, she started that and it didn't catch on immediately. But you know, now you can look back and go, okay, so it's been going for some time here. Because it's not a light switch. You know, you can't just flip it and go, great, the floodgates are open. Mm-hmm. You know, this has been tried before, the Me Too style movement. And just this time it caught on. Yeah. And I don't know whether that's media picking it up or whether it was just mm-hmm. our society's, it was just the right time for our society to accept it. But you got to keep trying that stuff.
I think Emma Watson's, one of her main goals in her speech to the UN was that feminism is not a dirty word.
Yeah.
We've taken it like women don't like to identify as feminists because there's this stigma about it. And I think she was inviting men and women to accept the feminist movement regardless of what we call it. Like, mm-hmm. let's accept this movement of equality. And I think that was her statement. And people didn't necessarily get that as the takeaway. Mm-hmm. And it was a good one.
And that's one of the most difficult things about a movement like this is you need, and you can look at all the movements throughout history, you know, certainly in American history, you need these extremists to push the boundaries really far. Mm. But, you know, they have to go way past the message. Mm-hmm. And that it just, unfortunately, that's just the way it is because it's hard for people to take your point seriously until, you know, you're really like, it's way up in their face. And mm-hmm. so you get these people, you know, it happened, I, you know, my dates might be off, but like in the 70s with maybe 60s
burning
with
the
feminism,
bra.
Yeah, like, and you know, burning the bras is what it is,
it
but
was
you
a
did
symbol.
Have people mm-hmm. who took it way too far and it became like a hatred for men. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately it has to be done. And I say, it's really unfortunate because then it gives the other side something to point to and go, mm-hmm. that's what feminism is.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, that's not what feminism, you know, again, you can't take one small example and then mm-hmm. tie the whole group to that. Yeah. But unfortunately, you need that to push it forward.
Speaking of that, I think it's interesting how there's always been this outward appearance thing with the pendulum swinging. Like in the 20s, it was like, I'm going to cut my hair real short into the bob. And then in, you know, the 60s, 70s, it was that I'm going to burn my bra. And then like now it's like the pee hats. It's like,
the what?
Well, I'm not going to say the word.
The kitten hats.
The kitten hats.
The pink kitten hats.
They, yes, hats. I'm not going to say what
What
they are.
Are those supposed to be shaped
when,
like?
When
like,
Trump
like
said
uterine
cat
horns
ears.
Or something?
Cat no, ears. But like
he word.
When, oh, when Trump yeah. said, I just grab them by the...
This is going to sound terrible. I thought they were supposed to be like uterine horns no. or something.
I wish they were. No, I don't. Because
no, I
one of the big problems with the hats is they marginalize a lot of people, you know, like women who don't
transgender
have uteruses.
Women, yeah.
You know? Mm. And... You know, and that's the problem with a lot. And like, and again, it's the, I think one of the very few faults of the Me Too movement was actually started by a woman of color. And it's been mainly adopted by white women.
Yeah.
And, you know, she wasn't the woman who started it. Only her arm was present on the cover of the Time magazine.
Yeah.
She was like completely cut out of the photo. And she was the one who started it like years ago. And I think that happens because, you know, if you want something to get really popular, you know, if you want the popular like white celebrities to do it, you kind of have to water it down a bit.
You got to put Taylor Swift's face on
Taylor Swift was on there.
Glitter
that's
and
all,
all
that mattered. And I think that that kind of happens with like, you know, the pink hats and things like that, because like really like when you put a reproductive organ on the face of a movement, that ostracizes so many people. And so many people that identify as women or don't identify as either or, and you totally mm. leave them out of the movement, and they're a really valuable part to it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like little passive aggressive things. Like, you know, and people say like, oh, like, you know, that's not real. Or like, you have to pick a side, like you have to be male or female, you know, and which I know is like biologically for Jake kind of hard to
well, to I mean, let's be honest, other than the very, very few cases that I'm not even sure, you know, biologically, you know, whether there's a genetic code difference, but you do either have an X and a Y or two X's.
Well, you
but
do.
I'm not going to diminish the way that, you know, people feel about themselves or whatever. That's fine. But yes, biologically.
But it is like, and I think that, and again, that's the difference between, you know, sex and gender, you know, and gender is so much based in like emotional ties.
Right.
And like, I know so many agender people who are fantastic people and, you know, it's kind of hard for them to have a voice. I think the same way that the bisexual community feels that they don't have a voice.
Right.
Because I think that agender people and bisexual people have the same problem where like people think that they're kind of making it up. And like, oh, you just want the best of both worlds. And they're like, actually, we have the worst of both worlds because everyone hates us.
Yeah.
There's one world and we got the worst of it.
And I think that it's hard for people like that to really find their place in the modern feminist movement, you know? And
they've been shut down by the very people who are saying they protect them.
Exactly.
And I think that that's a really hard thing to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like you can't continue changing the name of the movement because then it loses a lot of its power.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I think, you know, kind of like you were saying earlier, how like you're at the march and like you have like every type of speaker to like, you know, really like give everyone a voice. But then it becomes hard to like, because then you're standing there and you kind of want to march and you kind of want to do things, but you're waiting to like hear what everybody has to say. And then like the message kind of gets like
diluted.
It's diluted, which is hard. And you know, and I don't have a solution for
No.
And that's what I'm saying is like, there is no solution for it. I think empathy is a good solution.
And that's one of the tough things we deal with is there the most of the problems that plague, the big problems that plague our society these days, they don't have simple solutions. I mean, if they, you know, they just don't. I mean, and there might be a simple solution, but there's not a simple way to get there. Because if there was, it would be done already. So everything's more complicated. Like even that, you know, when we went down to the march, it was too long for us. Like we had to leave before we could actually march because, you know, we brought our kids with us because we wanted them to see it and see what was going on and be a part of it. But after 2 hours of listening to, you know, half politicians get up there and speak and basically just, you know, talk about, you know, basically democratic
and
issues,
taxes,
half of them, they weren't even talking about, you know, women's rights
and
or
some of them were, but it, not
no,
everybody.
No. And
yeah,
I'm talking, yeah, there's only a few like this, but it was a little irritating to hear them get up there and just push their political agenda at a movement that's not about that. But you know, like you said, I mean, empathy is probably a really good solution to a lot of these problems, but it's a very difficult thing to convince the entire society to get in on.
I wouldn't necessarily say that the march wasn't about pushing a political agenda, because I think, I mean, one of the main messages from the march in Baltimore was getting more women to the polls. So I think it was kind of a political agenda, at least this time. So like, I don't want to say that it wasn't political, because I think it was. But
well, I mean, you know, it has to be political because it was driven by the inauguration last year.
Right.
So it was an, you know, started out as somewhat of an anti-Trump, and maybe more heavily than I realize, an anti-Trump, you know, march. But, you know, my issue was not that pushing a political agenda, which would be getting women to the polls. It was pushing their specific political agendas, which bothered me.
Yeah.
It just, to me, it took away from the vibe of the march.
Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to talk about some of the political backlash for some of the, or the social backlash, I guess, against a lot of the people, men who are being accused of these assaults. Like, I have found it hard for myself personally to separate what they have done as an artist and what they have done as a person. I'm really struggling with that just because there are, you know, athletes and religious leaders and politicians and businessmen and celebrities. And it's like, well, I really like some of Johnny Depp's movies, and like, he's going to play Grindelwald in the next Fantastic Beasts, and like J.K. Rowling came out and said she's okay with it on Twitter, and then everybody's mad at J.K. Rowling, and then she's like, look guys, you have to separate what he did with what he does. And it's like, it's so hard to, she didn't come out and say that, other people did, she just came out and said he's in the movie, like whatever.
Deal with it.
Yeah. But it's like, I'm really struggling personally with like, how do I separate all the incredible newscasts that I show my mm-hmm. students every year from the Today Show and the fact that I now despise Matt Lauer. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I separate that? How do I'd be rewriting some of my curriculum? Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's difficult
and it was
for me.
It was so hard when this stuff started to know what was true and what wasn't. And I was actually shocked because a lot of times you find out that this stuff gets blown out of proportion. I was shocked at the accuracy to how this was being reported in terms of like before the details would come out, the people that got really, where it came down really hard on a certain person, before the details came out, I was like, wow, you know, they seem to be jumping on this a little quick. Like, it's a little he said, she said right now. But then, like, over the next day or two, all these details was come out. And I was just really shocked at the accuracy of the accusations and how this information would come out afterwards. But, you know, because you do run that risk of, again, people will take one example if they get one wrong. Like, I know, like, was it Aziz Ansari?
Mm-hmm.
He got, you know, he got blasted.
Yeah.
And actually, I will say that the media, I thought, did a pretty good job of not blowing his out of proportion because it turned out to just be a bad date.
Yeah.
The woman had a bad date and accused him of unwanted sexual advances. And really, now it has come out that, you know, he may have tried to, like, kiss her or something, but they were on a date. And, you know, it just, whatever it was, she kind of admitted eventually, like, okay, yeah, it wasn't bad. It was just a bad date. But, you know, I thought they actually did I think the media has done a better job than I would have expected coming into this whole situation of identifying what was real and what wasn't, mm-hmm. which is impressive for the media. They usually don't do a good job with that stuff.
And I also, I kind of appreciate how instead of the first step now being don't believe the woman, let's just, you know, like ignore it. I actually appreciate that with the Aziz Ansari thing, like the first step in this was to believe the woman, which mm-hmm. is very rare in these cases. And I think the yeah. Me Too movement really helped with that. And like if it was blown out of proportion, it gets figured out, you know, and everything's, you know, a little smoothed over. But I think it's a big step for women in that, like, they don't have to fear that they're going to immediately be doubted because that's, you know, the first, that's why a lot of women don't come forward in these cases because they're like, no one's going to believe me. He's too powerful. And it just, like, it doesn't even matter. So why would I say anything?
Yeah. And,
you know,
and I'll say this just to play devil's advocate, because in case somebody is out there thinking this, but I know people that would immediately come back and go, well, you know, but look at the Duke lacrosse players who got accused of raping this stripper that came to their, you know, their it's not their dorm,
frat house.
So she comes to their frat house and she, you know, got them all for rape, and she accused them all of rape. And they, you know, she was immediately believed, and they went to court, and these kids like lost their scholarships. They got kicked out of college. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out it just didn't happen. It mm-hmm. was completely made up, mm-hmm. and there was no backlash on the woman for what happened. Now, I bring that up because,
well, they could sue her for perjury. I'm sure
they
there
could,
was,
but what, you know, what does she have? They're Duke lacrosse players.
They
know,
were.
Chances
Duke
are they
players.
Came from wealthy families.
Yeah.
But I bring that up because if you're out there thinking that it's that same fallacy of bringing up one situation and mm-hmm. using it to justify, you know, an entire, you know, a group or an entire situation. So, you know, just because there is an example of the woman, you know, ruining these players' lives doesn't mean that every woman that comes out is lying. And mm-hmm. you're right. I mean, we do need to believe them at first because the backlash of not believing them is worse, mm-hmm. I think, than believing them. And not believing them in a way immediately where you you know, I guess, so that kind of brings up the point of what I was talking about earlier. I was surprised at how accurately, not just they were being reported by the news, but that they were being fired. So these men were being fired, and I was like, wow, it seems really quick to fire them. And then it comes out, you know, all the details come out, and you're like, oh, that's why they got fired.
I think that HR has been involved with some of these bigger ones for a little longer than we know publicly, like especially with Matt Lauer. Like that wasn't, some of those were like inside jobs, like the people worked for the Today Show. Mm-hmm. So I think they were reporting it. But it, to your point about not believing people, I think like the thing I liken it to like is at school with our students, if a student reports to us that they have been hit by an adult, or if a student says, like, just joking around, oh, I'm going to kill myself, those two things, if we don't report them and it turns out to be the case, then I am legally liable. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of turning into that where it's this protection over something that's happening to our youth population. It's my responsibility to protect them, whether it's real or not, whether they're just mad at their mom because they yelled at them in the morning, or whether they're just like joking around with their friends saying they're going to kill themselves. It's my responsibility to make sure it's reported and it gets taken care of. And I think that that is now the case with the Me Too movement. It is everyone's responsibility to report whether it's real or not, whether it happened or not. You report it, and then you'll sort it out.
Right, again, because the repercussions for...
are worse.
For not reporting it can potentially be so much worse than the repercussions for reporting it. And same thing, if a kid, you know, says jokingly, I'm going to kill myself, and you report it, and it turns out he really was just joking, no harm, no foul. You know, nothing happens. The kid doesn't get in trouble. You don't get in trouble. You know, but if it wasn't just a joke, you know, you might save the kid's life.
Right.
So, of course, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess that kind of wraps things up. So Katie, we want to thank you very much for being here today. It was awesome. I had a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, there's Mary. Maybe we should stop recording.
The dog.
Our dog got
out.
Free.
Oh, don't let her knock over your margarita.
Oh, Mary. If you would like to join us as a guest host, you can visit the Contact Us page on our website and send us a sound clip talking about something you're interested in. You don't need anything fancy. Just headphones with a microphone are fine. Do us a favor and keep it under 2 minutes so we have time to listen to them all.
But also, you can suggest a topic via email or on our Facebook page. This is super important if we want to keep the conversation fresh.
You can find us on Facebook at R2S Podcast, on Twitter at R2S_podcast, and on Instagram at Return to Sender Podcast. Links to each of these are available on our website, returntosenderpodcast.com.
And of course, we would always love to hear from you via email at r2spodcast@gmail.com. And remember, all the twos are the number two and not the word. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and please leave us a review, preferably a good one.
Remember to help us out on Patreon. Just $1 a month can keep our conversation going.
So until next time, I'm Jake.
And I'm Allie.
And you've been listening to Return to Sender.
I'm Caroline.
And I'm Eliza.
And you're listening to Return to Sender.